item number five, recreational licenses, tag, permit, and stamp refunds. This is a briefing and a public hearing. Dave Ware, our game division manager, is here to brief us.
Madam Chair, Commissioners, again for the record, my name is Dave Ware. I'm the Game Division Manager for the Department of Fish and Wildlife. And you're going to see a lot of folks from the Game Division today. And so just kind of a quick reminder overview for folks that this is the third year of a three-year package. And so we tend not to make very many changes as a result of being in between our major season-setting cycles. But always we come back and make some adjustments to the rules each year. But looking forward to a fairly significant three-year package coming up. We think starting next year. So lots of things are going to be occurring here soon. So the gist of the some of the licensing changes that that we're looking at doing had to do with developing something called a replacement tag. So we had duplicate tags, we had tag exchanges, but hadn't defined what a replacement was. So a replacement is done free of charge, and it's only for those folks who have taken an animal that's unfit for consumption. We're also looking at trying to increase the number of multi-season deer licenses sold by reducing that license, improve customer satisfaction with the second deer or elk tag. A lot of concerns received about the level of increase that we did with the last licensing package. We want to clarify requirements for master hunters with second deer or elk tags, helping us deal with damage situations, and then improve harvest reporting for damage permits, a variety of damage permits. So the first one is to WAC 220-55-040, and the major changes in there, the things you'll see in there, have to do with creating a replacement tag, again, for when an animal is unfit for consumption. Clarifies the languages. They're the language for refunds and exchanges. Always when we open up a rule, we try to clean up some of the concerns that we've heard from the public over time. Allows refunds for those hunters who are required by their business to be out of state during the time the license was valid. We've typically done that for those in the military, but hadn't done it for others. And so that's a concern that has come up infrequently, but it's come up. The rest of the changes are really a result of wanting to reduce fees for a lot of those licenses. There is a statute that allows the commission to create a combination license and then set the fee for that license at or below the combined cost of the licenses. And so while this hasn't been done very much, and I think there's some question of what the complete intent of that statute is, this is really the first time that we've made a major foray into creating some combination licenses. And so not a lot different. The legislature sets the fees in most cases, but this is one allowance for the commission to set fees. So the multi-season deer permits, we're combining those with a person buying an original big game license that includes deer. And so if they only purchased deer in 2013, that license would have cost $226, and so it would reduce that cost to $182 for 2014. Of the permits available, there's about 8,500 deer multi-season deer permits available. We've been selling less than 4,000 since the since all of the license changes, and so the intent is to try to sell some additional licenses, but also provide some additional opportunity for folks, because this permit allows a hunter to participate in archery, muzzleloader, and modern firearm seasons. We made a commitment a few years ago that we would fund part of the private lands access program with the expansion in the number of permits we were making available, and we've struggled to realize the total funding that that we had initially anticipated. So this is to try to get us back there. A second deer tag. As I mentioned before, this was one of the significant concerns we heard from the public when the fees went up, went from $20 a number of years ago to $66. And so there was a lot of concern about that and about that fee increase. But typically, while we had fewer people applying for those second deer tags, we did continue to sell about the same number that we had sold previously. So this really is just in response to the concerns that we heard from the public about that cost. And so the intent is to reduce that down to the cost of an original license. So it's going to be the same as the original deer license and tag. And so this will result in some reduction in revenue to the agency, depending on how much. It could be as high as $73,000. With the Master Hunter deer tag, we've combined that with the original license so that we could reduce that fee as well. In a lot of cases, we've had a lot of questions about some of the things that we've done in the past in terms of, can I use my original tag if I've not used it during a damaged season or some of these Master Hunter hunts? You know, because we really don't want to pay the $66 or $60 when we're really, from one perspective, we're really just trying to assist the agency with dealing with the damage situation. Certainly, we have the benefit of taking an animal, but anyway, so this is to try to balance some of those concerns. A little bit of potentially a loss of revenue, but it's pretty minor. And one thing that this really is really going to help us with, and we're excited about mostly, is that we've had some issues with harvest reporting, because if you end up participating in a Master Hunter hunt, you don't necessarily need a second tag. And so when you report your harvest, and knowing that the hunting season, depending on the tag type you have, runs from September to December, and you report harvest in January, February, or March, basically, that data is cleansed from our harvest system, because it's outside of the window for hunting. And so, anyway, it just creates a lot of confusion on our harvest statistics. And so this, because it'll be a separate tag, it'll be captured. The harvest information will be captured unique to that tag. We're also looking at creating a damaged deer tag. Again, so not all of the damage opportunity is for Master Hunter. Some of it is we actually allocate a number of permits that have been set by the commission for damage prevention permits. And so this would require that a person getting, so not the landowner, but the hunter receiving the damage prevention permit would need to purchase this tag and would pay a fee of $20. Again, helps us deal with the, and there would be some loss of revenue, but helps us really deal with harvest collection. In the past, we've asked the landowners in many cases to try to track that harvest for us, and it's been pretty difficult to get that to happen. So this puts the onus on the hunter, but also allows us to track who gets those permits. On the elk side, the biggest issue, we're creating Master Hunter elk and damage tags. Didn't see the same kind of issues with the multi-season tag for elk, because they're a little more coveted and people are willing to pay that fee for a multi-season elk tag. Again, these tags would be required of hunters for a fee of $20. And so this would probably create a little revenue, maybe as much as $2,000. And again, facilitates harvest collection. So in summary, what we're proposing reduces the fee for the multi-season deer tag, reduces the fee for a second deer tag, creates a master hunter tag and a damage tag for both deer and elk. Overall, we expect it to increase revenue mainly because of the multi-season sales as much as $300,000 and greatly facilitates and improves our harvest data collection.
Great. Thank you. Any questions for Dave? I think it's all pretty straightforward. Commissioner Schmitten.
Dave, thank you. You always do a great job. I'm going to think out loud for a moment, and it's a little dangerous for me. First point, it's good to see the department being willing to adjust down as well as up and license, and I think it's appreciated. My confusion is around the data harvest from damage prevention permits and kill permits, and the issue is we're not getting the data. Heretofore, and there is a benefit to the department, there's no cost for those. So our new approach for a permit that had no cost is to charge $20. And there's two pieces of that. One, for the hunters to purchase a damage tag, that's a good bargain, $20 still. But have you had any pushback on the master hunter tag, which also would go up for $20? You know, we're asking those people to do a lot for us, and suddenly now we're going to tag them with another $20 fee. Any feedback from them?
Sure. Actually, we have two organizations. One's called the Game Management Advisory Council, and the other one is our Master Hunter Advisory Committee as well. And so we did talk to both of those groups about these changes. And overall, the Game Management Advisory Committee was not supportive of the reduction for master hunters, but we're also not supportive of the second tag reduction. Part of that came from the discussions when we raised the fees. We were in communication and got a lot of support from the Game Management Advisory Council and the members for those fee increases. But kind of the principle behind some of what we did with them in the structure of those fee increases was we tried to keep some of the entry type hunting licenses relatively cost of those relatively small, and so didn't really increase the deer license very much, didn't increase the small game license very much, but in exchange to trying to meet the revenue increase objectives that we were looking for, one of the things that they thought or they felt was that a second deer tag or a second elk tag was a bonus. It was an extra thing. It was an increased opportunity, and so folks ought to be willing to pay for that. And so that's why they still don't support necessarily reducing that second deer license. But master hunters did support the master hunter tag. I think not necessarily everything about it, but they did support creating that tag at a reduced fee, so that it would clean up the harvest issues.
Other questions? Commissioner Holzmiller.
Now, on your damage tags, because there are some of those in our part of the world, if the rancher himself were to use them, does he have to buy the tag?
Now, that depends. We essentially have two types of damage tags. One is a kill permit.
Uh-huh.
And with a kill permit, a landowner could, depending on the level of damage on their property, could be allowed to use that kill permit and keep the animal. And in that case, they wouldn't need a license or a tag. But if you get a damage prevention permit, again, those are set by the commission. If you get a damage prevention permit, then that does require a hunter to have a license, and in this case would now also require them to get a damage tag.
Okay, so they couldn't put the original elk tag on it. They would need to buy an additional tag,
yes,
correct?
Right.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Other questions? Seems like it's getting ever more complicated. But I know what we're, and actually during my confirmation hearing, I was asked about the complexity of the hunting rule pamphlet.
Right.
And I acknowledged it's been an issue for a long time, but that is the way we offer opportunity. And that's what we're doing here. Commissioner Carpenter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question that's maybe not necessarily related to your presentation, but I live in the Skagit Valley, and I have been drawn into the Skagit elk issue by a number of people, and I had people in my office this last week ask me what the policy is when someone shoots an elk on their farm. And this has been happening now recently with permits issued to get rid of these elk that are a problem. And they then whack up the elk and take just the choice portions of the elk and leave the carcass there. What is or is there a policy related to that?
Yes, there is a wastage law. And actually, you heard earlier today from Deputy Director Storr about the enforcement omnibus bill that's making its way through the legislature and on its way to the governor. And so the wastage law was modified a little bit this past year in that omnibus bill. But essentially, it identifies those portions of the meat that would be required for a person to remove. But certainly you could still, depending on the situation, you could still leave the rib cage and bones and things like that of an elk in the field where you found it. But obviously, in this setting, that's probably not going to be very supported or much supported by the landowner because he doesn't want the carcass in his field. So a little bit surprised to hear that that's happening.
Yeah, that's the problem. These are fairly small acreage part-time farmers, sometimes full-time farmers, and the carcasses are being left there. Quite a bit of nuisance and pests and dogs carrying stuff around, so it's probably something that's going to come up more.
Yeah, typically, you know, when if we refer a hunter to a landowner's property, there's a communication between the landowner and that hunter, and his expectations or her expectations should be made known to the hunter in terms of taking the carcass out of the field.
Just for clarification, up in the valley, does those same rules apply to all the hunters, state hunters and tribal hunters?
Well, certainly the state doesn't regulate tribal hunters, but if we're involved in gaining some support from a landowner to allow tribal hunters, it's the same thing where there is some expectation that the landowner would let the hunter know, regardless of whether they were a tribal hunter or a state licensed hunter, would let them know of their preferences in terms of leaving a carcass in the field.
Okay. Good conversation.
Yeah, great. Thanks. Questions. Thank you.
Do we have anyone who signed up? We do. We'll take the public input. Thanks. Okay. Just to review the rules again, each citizen gets 3 minutes to testify. Come forward. The mic is on already. So just you don't have to speak too closely. These are pretty sensitive mics. When your time is up, the beeping noise will sound. So please listen for it. Dan Marcotte. So you have to start by telling us what happened.
Oh, I'm disabled. I broke my back real bad in 1995. And, you know, you plan your whole life to work hard and save money and retire, and things happen that quick. Mm. And all of a sudden, you're disabled. Mm. And that's why I'm here today, to talk about different facets of disability. Like Dave was just talking about, the licensings and things like that. First, I'd like to thank you guys for being here, because you're our direct link between the standard person out on the outside and the department. And I really appreciate that a lot. This gives us an opportunity to voice our opinion and educate ourselves and come to some type of a conclusion that we can move forward in all things. coming into this, I was a construction worker. I've never been in politics. The Department of Fish and Wildlife on the outside has traditionally been hammered by the public. They do a crappy job at this or that or whatever. I'm here to tell you I have received nothing but respect since I've been on my quest to help the disabled hunter. Nate Pamplin is an absolute qualified person. He is more than generous, helped me, being very courteous. Dave Ware is extraordinarily good. Dolores, they're all really great people. I can't say enough about them. I'm very proud of our department and their leadership. When it comes to licenses and other facets, I appreciate the department cutting the cost of licenses for all of us. But there is that facet of the disabled hunter that's out there that is falling aside because of lack of harvest. When you can't climb the mountains, when you're restricted to hunting within 100 yards of the road, and year after year you don't harvest an animal, there's a large number of people that are falling out of this. And by changing some of the laws and the wordings, the harvest, the legal description of harvest, we can get some of these people back in to the program, that we can offset some of these costs. There's a lot of people that would love to come back in. In my particular case, I was chosen for a vehicle-only entry for one person in Chisaw, and everybody else had to walk in. My permit was from the 14th to the 18th of October. I showed up early. I couldn't get in. I was refused entry because my permit was for the 14th. I couldn't get in. Then I found out that that was a Monday. On Saturday the 12th, the general public hunting season opened. I had to sit there at the gate in my Jeep, because I can't walk in, and watch the general public go in. I watched three guys go in on horseback. We're back at noon with their three deer. Beautiful bucks. It was 2 days before I could get in. By the time I got into an area that's 3 miles by 3 miles, I saw people walking. I saw people on horseback. I saw people on bicycles. By the time I get into my Jeep and I hunt within 100 yards of the road, you couldn't find a buck. I'm sorry.
You can finish your thought.
Okay. I had to adhere to the language of requirement, legal requirement of a 2-point or a 3-point of this, or that legal qualification of what I could shoot. When you shoot from within 100 yards of the road, I haven't seen a 3-point standing there waiting for me to shoot. They're in the gullies, they're in the forest, they're in the mountaintops where I can't go. If we can change some of this wordage, some of this legal description of harvested animals for the disabled hunter, we can get these people back in the program. It is a great benefit to go out and just be in the woods. There's nothing like seeing a sunrise. It was worth the trip. I loved it. When you're disabled and you're hammered with pain and finances, the harvest is even more important. It's a lift up. It helps with the food. It helps in the freezer. But by changing some of these, and thank goodness for the reduction in the fees, we can get some of these people back in to offset this cost. And I really appreciate it. And I'm scheduled to talk more, and there's multifaceted. There's a lot more to tell, and I appreciate your time.
Okay. And will you be with us this afternoon when we talk about our item number 12, hunters with disabilities? I hope you'll be with us. Okay, that concludes the public input.